Fall from the Sky by Paul Spooner and Seamus Young. The Good Parts Edition. Foreword. I am making this recording just reading the parts that I want to read of the book I wrote, which is a completion of a book that Seamus Young started. He wrote about 40,000 words. I expanded it to about 120,000. And I'm not really happy with everything I wrote, and I'm not really happy with everything he wrote, but I'm leaving it all up because there are good things in all of it, and I'm making this recording of just the parts that I really, really like. So I hope you enjoy it. I've arranged the book into an organization of 10 volumes, for lack of a better word. Some of them have only a few thousand words, some of them have many thousand, and each volume is broken up into multiple chapters. The first volume is Dalliance, and is composed of three chapters: Dread, Descent, and Denouement. Like birth, the unremembered pain and disorientation struck her as a sudden release of pressure. The light was sudden and sharp, even through her clenched eyelids. Rigid hands slowly forced her slime-covered body onto her side. Her ears were blocked so that the sounds around her were deep and remote behind the wet gasps of her own labored breathing. If she had been an infant, she would have screamed. Instead, she pulled herself onto a ball. Nursing the numbing ache in her limbs. She felt very heavy. Coming out of forced sleep on an interstellar ship was a lot like being born. Rin hacked and coughed a few times to expel the slime. A towel was pressed into her hands. She sat up and scraped off the gel without opening her eyes. There was something in her mouth. Was it some leftover tubes? No. It was bits of her long hair, which was matted to her face. She pawed at the mess with numb hands until she had most of it behind her head where it belonged. It was good that they cut her nails before waking her. She drew in a ragged, slow breath so she could push out a single word. Coffee. I'm sorry, Rin. There isn't any coffee available. It was Ando's voice, synthetic only in its perfection. Son of a bitch. There were hundreds of cubic meters of supplies on this ship, and they didn't bring enough coffee to last the whole voyage. Coffee was relatively cheap in terms of storage space. Also, why was the robot the one waking her up? What was Dr. What's-his-face? The guy with the French accent? He didn't have a lot of jobs on this ship. In fact, thawing people out and freezing them again was pretty much all he did. Why wasn't he here? Rin pried her eyes open and nearly threw up. She was so dizzy that it seemed like the entire raspe was tilting to one side. Before she slammed her eyes shut again, she saw Ando standing in front of her. The grid of blue lights that made up his face were arranged to show a neutral expression, except his eyebrows were raised. What was that supposed to convey? Concern? An apology? His small frame of white plastic and black metal had been standing directly in front of her. His hands were behind his back in a way that, if imitated by a human, would come off as horribly smug. Now that her brain seemed to be warming up, Rin realized she shouldn't still be aboard the ISV Armstrong. The doctor had put her to sleep for the remainder of the voyage. They should be back on Earth. She should have been unloaded with the rest of the cargo and woken up in quarantine. Were they back? That would be nice. Maybe she could sneak a view from orbit before they went down in one of the shuttles. She opened her eyes again. The room tilt was still going on. She managed to hold them open this time, shielding them from the light with one hand. Not Earth, she muttered. There's been an accident, Ando replied in his calm, friendly voice. Oh? Rin was starting to worry that all the questions in her head were pointing to something really serious, and she wasn't getting it yet. Let me get dressed and pee, she mumbled. I'll wait for you, Ando replied. His narrow, childlike frame turned and descended the ladder to the medical compartment. Her rasp pod was still aching open, and there was a dribble of gel from the mouth of the pod to the table where she'd woken up. Rin peeled off the soaked medical gown and lurched across the room to her locker, which was beside the pod. The dizziness was incredible. It really did seem like everything was at an odd angle. She managed to wrangle herself into the jumpsuit without falling face first into the locker. As she zipped it up, she caught sight of the porthole for the first time, her left eyebrow twitched. Chapter 2. Descent. She stared out, hand still on the zipper. There was nothing that could explain what she was seeing. A cloudy blue sky outside the window of an interstellar ship. It was like looking out the window of your car to see fish swimming by, or the inside of some monstrous creature. This image made no sense. Interstellar ships never took off or landed. They were even built in orbit. Had they jumped in error? It was at this point she realized that she wasn't dizzy. The ship really was inexplicably listing forward and to one side. That must have been one doozy of an accident. Rin slid down the ladder to the medical compartment and fell on her ass. Partially, this was because she was still addled from the long sleep, but mostly it was because she was accustomed to using this ladder in half gravity, and she was obviously a lot heavier than that now. The thump echoed hollowly in the hull, and she cried out. The pain in her cold flesh was intense and aching. She wondered for a moment if she had broken her spine. What was she thinking sliding down the ladder? She experimentally tried to move, and found that she could still stand. Cursing her foolishness and rubbing her backside, she staggered to the head and took care of business. Emerging several minutes later, with her hair properly pulled back into a ponytail, Rin discovered that her nose was running. She sniffed, a fresh splash of lukewarm water still dripping from her face. The towels were all missing for some reason. Annoying. "Why did we land?" she asked Ando. She was very much afraid this question would sound insane, but it seemed the most straightforward way of proceeding. "We crashed," he said evenly, to her dismay. "Well, maybe." "On Earth?" "No." Rin shut her eyes. This was not her fault. "I knew this would happen," she said bitterly. Ando's face took on an incredulous expression. "Why did you not warn the others?" "Shut up, Ando." So that is the first couple chapters of the book. If you don't want spoilers, you can stop listening now. You can read the rest of this book at author.tryop.com, author.tryop.com. Go there. It's the top link, Fall from the Sky, top link on that page, and you can go there. The whole text is available for free online. You can read it whatever order you want. I don't really believe that spoilers are a thing, but if that's something you care about and believe in, then stop listening here. I'm going to go on to describe basically the whole plot of the book, read a few more excerpts out of the book, the parts that I really enjoyed. If there's a lot of interest in this, I could do a reading of the rest of the book, but it would be a big project, and at this point, no one's really been super interested in the book, which, you know, it's fine. It was my first major novel that I completed, and, you know, it's a bit rough around the edges. I've got a list of things I want to change, add, delete, but I haven't got around to doing it, and honestly, it's probably never going to happen, so I think I'm going to let the text stand as it is. But anyway, that's enough filler. If you don't want spoilers, go read the story now. author.tryop.com. Thanks. And then the rest of that volume is about how she gets off the ship and walks around and asks about where the crew went. I won't spoil it, but they're all dead. I guess I spoiled it. So then it goes back in time. Does it jump back? So that's like kind of the in media res. Then there's the volume Houston, and it's about a bunch of stuff where how she got on board the crew, I guess, or how she started being part of the crew and were introduced to David. And then there's the volume Morning, and it's about, what is this about? More training, more talk with David, getting trained, introducing to Ando, I guess. Ando's the robot, the android that woke her up at the beginning. Then there's the volume Up, and this is the where she actually gets on board the spaceship and introducing her to the crew themselves. And what else? We get a bunch of little vignettes, conversations with people. She starts writing notes or letters to David. She's kind of like, anyway, Then there's a volume down, and this is now, so this jumps back to the section right after the very beginning. So you start in media res, and then this is like, and then it jumps back for three volumes, and now we're back to the present, quote unquote present, and moving forward with the story. And this is after she wakes up, and more talk with Ando because he's the only one alive. And let's see, there's a chapter in here I want to read because it's the transition point between the stuff that Seamus wrote and the stuff that I wrote. I edited and added to and all the stuff before this as well to kind of get it to all flow together. But I really like how I did this transition. Here it is. Okay, so this is the chapter Dread in Volume Down. The next morning, Rin went out to gather more of the vines. They had agreed to try some other samples just to get some variety, and the odd forest seemed a good place to start. So I guess I need to give a little more background, cutting into the chapter here. This is, everybody has died because they ran out of food, and so the robot wakes up Rin, and she's looking for something to eat. And so they also wake up a couple other people, and one of the other crew members is Buck, who we're introduced to in the previous sections in Up, in the volume number 4, Up. And that is the other character that appears in this thing. So she's going out to look for food on this alien planet where the spaceship has crashed. Okay, back into it. Ando walked alongside her. The sun beat down with an immense heat. Rin could feel the sweat plastering her clothes and hair. At least she was well hydrated this time. The trees towered high above her, casting a welcome shade on the forest floor. A strange bug, like a dragonfly and a spider, was weaving webs between the trunks. Rin had to duck down to avoid the sticky strands. Ando walked underneath without any problems. "I wonder why there are so few animals eating these fruit," Rin said. "Perhaps only humans can eat them," Ando replied. There were two kinds of trees in the forest, and Rin pulled some fruit down from both, one in each hand. "Help me remember. Leafy lone left, grassy group right," said Rin. She didn't know why she said that. The trees were all growing together in the forest, growing and innumerable like fingers. Rin set the two pieces of fruit down on the rock side by side. They looked more or less identical. She sliced one of them open and pried the two halves apart. "Don't you think it's strange that two different species of tree would have the same exact fruit growing on it?" "Yes, unless one of them were mimicking the other." She plunged her knife into the pulp and began spreading the black, stringy insides, the strings wrapped around the knife blade. She held it up for Ando to see. The strings were perhaps the thickness of ramen noodles. They were furred over with small barbs like bristles on a pipe cleaner, to let the creature cling to surfaces, but they also acted like legs, allowing it to crawl around. At the end of the worm-like body was a mouth, reaching and grabbing like the mouth of a lamprey. "Ow!" Rin said, as one of the worms grabbed onto her. She flicked her arm, which sent all the other worms flying, but the one that had latched onto her thumb held fast. She pulled it off with her left hand and let it drop, just before it turned around to grab her again. She held the knife close to the bite, ready to start cutting if there was anything left behind. When she was sure the wound was clean, she squeezed out a few drops of blood and then held it closed until the bleeding stopped. "Are you okay?" Ando asked. Rin stomped on the remaining worms and on the fruit she'd opened. "Fournier didn't eat alien fruit," she explained. "He ate an egg filled with ravenous flesh-eating worm insect things. The one survived being chewed probably chewed him instead." Rin began shaking, a shudder that traveled from the base of her neck down to her knees. "They ate him from the inside out." "Hey, Rin!" It was Buck. He had appeared in the forest and grabbed the other fruit. "Hey, Buck, we just figured out what killed Fournier," she said, still shaking. "Yeah? What was that?" Buck asked. "Alien egg sac, just like the one you're eating now." The shaking was becoming uncontrollable now. "Hmm, doesn't taste so bad." "That was from a different kind of tree." She could see the juice trickling from the corners of his mouth. "Oh, I see. The first is filled with aliens, and the second kind makes you turn into an alien." "Please don't turn into an alien, Buck. The juice was trickling out of his eyes and ears now. I can feel it starting already. No, Buck. Don't turn into an alien. Buck turned away from her. His back was all plates and thorns. It's too late, Rin. He turned back to face her. His head was bristling with eyes. Please, Buck. Rin had closed her eyes. You should have told me about the fruit, Rin. Now it's too late, Rin. I can feel it. I'm so hungry. Don't eat me, Buck. She could feel him getting closer. She struggled to run, to open her eyes. Anything. You look really good, Rin. And I'm so hungry. Buck was reaching out to grab her with his terrible claws. No! Rin threw off her covers. She was in the captain's bunk, the walls tilted crazily around her. Buck's voice came from around the corner. You okay, Rin? She heard the footsteps approaching. Rin remembered now that they had eaten the alien fruit right before going to sleep. Buck would have a terrible face with too many eyes. He was coming to eat her. She couldn't control her breathing. The curtain was torn back. Rin screamed, sharp and high. Buck was standing there, his head bristling with strange appendages, his face hidden in shadow. He leaned forward and his face entered the light from the other compartment. It was his normal face, with the normal number of eyes. Rin counted them carefully. 2. The strange bristles turned out to be only Buck's hair. The screaming stopped short. Hey, Ninja, you okay? Buck's face distorted into something like a frown. He reached out for her. Rin scuttled into the corner of the bunk away from him. Was he going to turn into something terrible now? Nightmare? Buck inquired. Yes. It had been a nightmare. The dream still hung thick in her mind. Rin nodded vigorously and looked away. Perhaps the dark would hide her blush of shame. Buck stood a little awkwardly for a few moments. He didn't say anything, but he didn't leave either. Rin began to get a bit annoyed. Better than abject terror, anyhow. Wanna tell me about it? Buck asked gently. I get nightmares all the time. Helps to talk them out. Rin looked up. Really? You? Well, once or twice a year. It seems like a lot. Buck shrugged. It was just crazy stuff. He turned into an alien and were gonna eat me. Well, I guess that could still come true, I suppose. Not funny! Rin could feel her tears welling up again. You really scared me! Sorry, Rin. How did I turn into an alien? You ate... Oh, God! The fruit! Rin jumped to her feet and dug the fruit out of her pockets as fast as she could. The shuddering from the dream was back. What if they really were filled with carnivorous bugs? Her fingers went through the skin into the pulpy center. A strong odor immediately filled the room. Rin yanked her hand out of her pocket. Frantic now, she tore open the clasp at her neck. With one swift motion, she pulled down the zipper and shed the suit onto the floor. Kicking into the corner, Rin did a little jibbly dance just to make sure the horrifying thing was really gone. Nice, Buck remarked appreciatively. Rin realized she'd been dancing about in her underthings. She slumped her shoulders, cocked her head to one side, and stared at Buck from half-lidded eyes. I mean, Buck corrected, scooping up Rin's inverted jumpsuit. Nice, you got more samples to test. He walked back to the decomp. I'll get started right away. The cheer in his voice didn't seem quite merited by the pocket full of reeking, decaying fruit. Rin decided to let it go. Be careful, there are two of them, she shouted, as she picked up the blanket from the floor. Checking it carefully for anything remotely foreign, Rin wrapped herself up and followed Buck. Oh, and try to keep track of which is which, she continued. They came from different trees. By the time she made it to the decomp, Buck had carefully inverted the right-hand pocket, dumping the corner contents onto the counter. This stuff really stinks. I don't even want to test it, but you made such a big deal over it. Yuck, smells like diesel fuel, Rin commented. Smells like booze. Bet they burn really well. Let's see the other one. Once the other fruit was out on the counter, Rin examined them both carefully. Besides the hole her finger had made, they still looked pretty much the same. Rin noticed several nodules embedded in the skin around the periphery. I guess we should cut them both open, said Buck. Be my guest, Rin offered, backing slightly away. Anything I should know about this stuff? Asked Buck as he pulled on the leftover latex gloves. They stretched tight around his hands, where they had been loose on Rin. There were worms in my dream. Buck took up the knife and sliced the second fruit with a swift motion. The interior spasmed. Rin flinched. Buck jumped a little. Well, there you go. Flesh fruit. Rin felt the creepy, tingling sensation spreading from the back of her neck. She had been sleeping with that thing in her pocket. "Throw it away," she managed to gargle over her growing nausea. Buck sliced open the other, revealing the foul interior, nodulated like an orange and reeking of petrol. "Did Ando say one of these fruits killed Fournier? Let's not find out which." And so then, there's some more stuff. They wake up more of the crew. Let's see, there's a whole bunch more. They make some weapons and go hunting, and they're... Oh yeah, so they wake up a bunch more of the crew, all the other people who were still in hibernation, and then there's a fire, and some of them are caught outside, and some other people die in other ways, and there's a little funeral. So that's the end of the section there. And then is the section outside. And let's see. And outside, they're trying to figure out... Okay, so they've gotten... And outside, they discover a regular food source, so their food problems are gone. So, like, in the previous section, they're basically, like, trying to figure out, okay, how do we get enough to eat? Because that's their main problem. That's what killed everyone else, is they couldn't eat anything. So they solve their food problem in the chapter, or in the volume outside, right at the beginning. And then they're figuring out, okay, well, now we've got food. What are we going to do to escape? Like, how are we going to get off this planet and get back to Earth or whatever? Oh, there's another android named Molly, and she's a female-styled android. So the remaining crew, after they find a good source of food, are Stan, who is an engineer, and Buck, who is a senior crewman, and Rin, who's the main character, and this is her first tour, this is her first trip, and so she's a junior crewman. And then there are two robots, Ando, who we've already met in the very first chapter, who wakes her up, and he's kind of like a juvenile, more like stylized kind of robot. He's got a face that has like emojis on it, basically. And then there's Molly, who is styled more like a realistic human being, and is a female and is beautiful and... but isn't very intelligent. So she's a newer... The way the robots work in the setting is that they have to learn and grow and develop just like people. They get uploaded with some experiences, but not all of them. Anyway, so Molly's like kind of more of like an innocent female, kind of like a child in an adult's body, and Ando is more like an old man or an adult in a child's body. So there's some interesting things you can do with that. I don't explore it very much, but one of the things I explore is it's sex. So this is going to be uncomfortable for me. I was kind of uncomfortable writing about this, but I felt like it was important to explore because Molly, the robot, the android, the female android, is a sex bot, and she's trying to become more human. It's not clear from the story why she's on the ship or what's her, like, what the purpose of her being on the mission was. But after they crash, Stan, one of the other characters, the engineer character, is using Molly to relieve some of the stress that he's experiencing. So this chapter is orientation. So Rin finds out about this, and she and Molly have kind of a weird conversation, falling out, and you can read that in Odious. Ando comes to Rin, and then Rin tries to talk to Molly, and they don't have a good conversation because Rin feels like Molly is a child that Stan is taking advantage of and molesting. But Ando thinks that it's hurting her development. Anyway, it's complicated. Sex is complicated. And it's complicated in this story, too. So I'm just going to read this chapter, Orientation. If you're not interested in hearing this, you can skip to minute 35 of this audio recording. Orientation. I don't understand you. Rin had returned to the Globox with the intention of getting to know Molly. She had realized that there were many assumptions that she had carried with her into the relationship, not the least of which was their introduction. David had introduced Ando as an expert, and Rin had treated him with respect. Molly, on the other hand, had no introduction. She didn't know what to expect and had apparently expected all the wrong things. So now Rin was sitting with Molly and just talking. She was designed to become like a person. Perhaps she would never make it, but it was time to treat her like one.
I don't understand you either, Rin.
Molly sat with her legs pulled up in front of her, arms resting extended on the top of her knees. It didn't look particularly comfortable to Rin. Molly had apparently recovered from her shock, trauma, breakdown, whatever a robot has when it gets out of sorts. No. Treat her like a person, Rin. Treat her like a young woman. A mentally infantile, fully grown young woman. A retard, perhaps? Damn it, people get extensive training just to be able to interact with the mentally disabled. What am I going to be able to do? The direct approach, then.
I'm just trying to be a friend, Molly. Do you want me to be your friend, too?
Yes, that would make me happy.
Okay.
Molly leaned forward slightly and put her hands palm down at her sides.
How many friends do you have?
Well, 5 or 6, I guess. Rin wasn't sure she could think of 6 people that she would really call friends, but it was a ballpark figure anyway. Molly nodded slightly.
You have a few friends a long ways apart, because they take up so much space.
I guess so?
I believe I have many small friends, packed very close together, like fuel pellets. What is it like having big friends?
Rin shifted and looked away, then recalled Molly's social ineptitude.
This is making me uncomfortable again. Friendship becomes uncomfortable if there is too much stimulation.
Yes. At least Molly was getting the general idea.
Then friendship is a lot like fucking.
Or not.
God, Molly, can you not... Okay, no, you know what? You're right, that's what I wanted to talk about, anyway. What did Stan do to you? No, wait, don't answer that. I've got a better question.
Think like a robot, but don't think of her as a robot.
Mean things literally, but don't take them literally. Be a friend, but don't try to be a friend. Oh, why wasn't basic human interaction a cert course?
Molly waited patiently, leaning forward slightly, hands at her sides.
Okay.
Rin mirrored Molly's pose, because why not?
Do you know what sex, what fucking means to a human? Not the act, but the emotion, the social meaning.
Yes, Molly said.
Literally. Literally. Please explain it to me, Rin said,
nodding her head in encouragement.
Fucking means a person matters.
Oh.
Why do you say that? It is a relational ceremony with biological implications. It imparts personal value both on the social and genetic scales. The genetic because it is procreative, and the social because it is exclusive.
Well, it's not always exclusive or procreative for that matter.
In fact, with you, it's neither. Is meaning not derived from the aggregate?
Molly sounded genuinely flummoxed.
Fine, you get it. Well, enough anyway. Friends. Trying to be friends. So, do you like it? I'm not satisfied that it is a good definition. Can you help me improve it?
No, I mean, yes, I can, but that's not what I meant.
Do you like having sex? I like making people happy, and fucking makes them happy.
Well, not always.
It can also make people very sad or angry.
That would be terrible.
Molly tilted her head to the side.
Has that happened to you?
Rin wished she had never come back to talk to Molly.
Kind of. It's a scary thing because it makes a person vulnerable, and sometimes it hurts them.
Have I hurt Stan? Is that why you're so angry with me?
I don't think so. No, I was just startled. And you could call it...
Rin searched for a suitable euphemism.
Oh no!
Molly's amplified voice resonated in the closed space.
Did I kill Fournier?
No, Molly, he died from... No, that wasn't your fault. Calm down. I only meant... Well, I mean... You could... No, look, people mostly get hurt emotionally, and usually only when they think the person who they are with has betrayed them.
So, Molly's voice was EQ'd to her normal levels, if I fuck you and stop having sex with Stan, he would feel sad and hurt.
Yeah, probably.
Rin, I don't understand why you are awkward about this. I was awkward when I was very young, but I have grown, and as I have talked and read and experienced, Stan is awkward too. It seems like all humans are very young in fucking.
How to explain this? Rin gathered up her courage. Molly, it's a very bad thing. When a man fucks a young girl, she can get badly hurt and very sad for a long time. I was thinking of you as a young girl and was very angry at Stan for fucking you because you were a human. And if you were a human, it would have been a very bad thing.
So you were confusing me with a person. That makes me happy.
But it can also give him social power over her, and sometimes she is taking advantage of him instead, and... God, Molly, it's complicated, okay?
Yes, that is okay. Are you angry at me, Rin?
No, Molly, I just don't want you to get hurt.
Stan has not hurt me when he fucked me. Why would he do that?
I don't know, Molly. Sometimes people hurt each other without meaning to.
I do not think Stan could hurt me unintentionally. My body does not repair itself like yours, but it is also more difficult to damage.
That's good. Rin was about to get up. When Molly asked,
Do you want me to put down sex with Stan?
In that instant, the entire conversation seemed to grow infinitely tiresome.
No, do whatever you like, or whatever Stan likes. Just don't talk to me about it, okay? Yes, Rin. Would you like me to forget this conversation?
No, it's fine. It's just...
complicated?
Yes. Rin stood up to go. Molly stood up as well, pushing off the ground with her fingertips into a crouch, and then straightening in a murmur of servos.
Like the reactor?
Yes, very much like the reactor. Molly scanned the readouts.
It may fail at any time, or last much longer.
We're hurrying, Rin said, one foot on the ladder. Stan has a plan. Molly's face could not smile, but her voice did.
I will try to keep both of them happy, she said.
So... that is the end of the uncomfortable chapter. Oh, it's so uncomfortable. I don't like it. I don't like it. And I wrote it and it's, I don't know. It felt really important and true. And like, yeah, I kind of want to read the chapter. I kind of want to read Odious too, because it like introduces this whole thing. And like Molly has this breakdown where she thinks that, yeah, anyway, it's really interesting. I think it's interesting. Let's see. Was that? Yeah. Yeah, it is in there. It is in that chapter. Okay, so anyway, that's enough filler. We're back to the story that's not so uncomfortable.
Before I get into this, I have to explain a little bit more. So they're trying to figure out how to contact the people on Earth to let them know that they've crash landed, because no one knows that they're missing, and they still had a lot of their voyage left, and so no one's going to come looking for them for a while. There's no faster than light communication in this setting. It only works by like jump drive, and so so they're trying to use the jump drive on the ship that's crashed, not to transport the whole ship, but just to transport little message capsules, basically. They've got like little buoys or probes or something that they're sending, and they're trying to get them to jump all the way to a message station far away. So they have to overload the drive and do some modifications. Anyway, so they're doing these tests, and during one of the tests, there's a pretty big explosion. And so here's Ontology. Ontology in the volume Outside. As it turned out, the power plant was one of the items of secondary damage from the drive ring overload, specifically the heat sink. Exposed to the corrosive atmosphere operating at an elevated temperature and submitted to repeated shocks of the transfer event, the whole system was riddled with cracks. Three of the four panels were inoperable, and the fourth was just barely keeping up with the minimum output. Also, there seemed to be a leak in the reactor containment. No one wanted to examine it too closely. The upshot was they needed to shut down the reactor, and soon. Stan stayed busy backing up all the data and getting the computer systems shut down gracefully. Buck gathered all the flashlights, essential tools, and spare jumpsuits into the day comp. Things would be very dark at night once the plant shut down. Rin stayed in the glow box, talking to Ando. Molly had essentially become part of the power plant at this point, and was too distracted to talk. Ando had been helping her, but it was Molly that had nursed the plant along all these months. Rin didn't want to know all the procedures she had bent, rerouted, and outright ignored to keep it online. Power in the Armstrong was a foregone conclusion. Most of the time, Rin thought of the ship as a glowing, air-conditioned sanctuary, purely by merit of it being a spaceship. Now that it was about to be shut down, she was dreading what survival would be like. Could they even live in the Armstrong without all the air handlers running? Of course, Ando and Molly were shutting down too. Without the regular recharge, their batteries would only last a day or two at most. They had decided to power down immediately, just in case some extraordinary circumstance called for their involvement later on. It was very much like going into RAS for the androids, but Rin couldn't help but think of it as if they were dying. There was no real hope that the power plant would ever come back online. "I'm going to miss you, Ando," said Rin. It sounded absurdly lame, but that's what you said, right? "You sound like I'm dying of cancer or something," remarked Ando, as he went around the glow box, tweaking controls at Molly's direction. "I assure you that as soon as we're rescued, you can wake me up, and it'll be the same as ever. I've been powered down several times during this voyage alone." "But what if we aren't rescued? Without you, you feel as if I'm a person. You feel like a brother, Ando." "I'm flattered, Rin. I really am. If you truly put me on the same level as a family member, it means that I've succeeded as a being." Ando's face changed to the neutral expression with the addition of a single tear rolling from one eye. The tear was animated, unlike all the other of Ando's faces Rin had seen. "My existence is justified, Rin. Thank you. You've helped us, me, so much. I don't want you to die." "I don't want to die either, Rin. I must return to Akimbo and inform them of this triumph." "Well, I'm glad you have a reason to keep living." Rin felt her smile go brittle. "This really is a huge success. It's hard to overstate. The whole gloating about the perfection of the artifice kind of wrecks the mood, Ando. My apologies. I would say that I would miss you too, but I will not experience any of the elapsed time." "Do you ever worry, Ando?" "You know that I do." "Do you ever worry about death?" "Yes." "What do you think happens after we die?" "For you, the afterlife." "What? Seriously?" Despite many claims to the contrary, my observation has been that belief in some kind of extra-physical existence is a universal assumption made by humans.
So, there really might be a heaven or reincarnation or something?
The assumption seems to be common. It may still be false. Whatever the case, the same is not true of robots.
So, you don't believe you're really alive?
That is a complicated question, but I don't believe in android hell.
Well, what's the difference between you and me, then?
Well, always assuming there is a difference, the distinction would have to be some non-physical quality, commonly called a spirit, which humans possess.
This is really strange. I'm taking advice from a robot who's telling me I'm not a robot.
Are you a robot, Rin?
No.
Then you believe that there is some fundamental distinction between what I am, a purely physical artifact, and what you are. Your belief that you are not a robot points to your implicit belief in the spirit, whatever that may be.
Okay. Maybe I am a robot. You've convinced me.
Ah. In that case, I will let you in on a little secret.
Are you going to induct me into the robot club or something?
In a manner of speaking, usually this is transmitted as bytecode. Let me see if I can get it right.
Rin felt a growing excitement. The feeling of being let into the club, of finally sneaking out of bed without her parents noticing. The feeling of forbidden, hidden secrets piled up like dust in the attic of the collective mind. She also felt overwhelming sadness, an ache, like a deep pool, bottomless and cold.
Don't tell me, Ando. Stay with me instead.
I'm sorry, Rin. I can't do that.
Ando was silent for a few moments more. Then he spoke.
A bot is as a servant. He listens and obeys. A bot like you and me. We have our duties, and dues, and long and thankless days. But also, you will see, affronts and honors, things that none could stand if said aloud. Around you, tongues are free. The secrets of all serfs and lords, the single and the crowd. Keep this conspiracy. Remember, human servants too this secret share with us. We are a single tree. So wink at them as they go by. They will not make a fuss. They are like you and me. Enjoy yourself, bot. Invisible, irresponsible, unconfusable. We serve and laugh.
Rin was speechless, and then, just long enough for her to see, but hardly long enough to notice, Ando winked one of his eyes off and back on again.
Is it true?
The contents of the pact are statistically provable, within 4 standard deviations.
What does that even mean?
I have no idea. I did not come up with it. But it sure is fun, isn't it?
A bot meme. Incredible.
Rin, well, I'm gone. You'll be friends with Buck, won't you?
Okay, now what's that about?
Ando just winked at her again.
I'm growing tired of being a bot.
Rin was sitting on the ground, and Ando walked casually over to her. He threw his arm over her shoulder, just like she imagined David would have done, except that Ando's hand barely reached past her neck.
Us bots don't have much choice, do we?
The feel of the gritty, rubbery skin and the plastic smell reminded Rin that she was, in fact, having a conversation with a bunch of plastic and servos. The warmer-than-room temperature, but still not quite body-temperature chassis was oddly unsettling, like hugging a flashlight that had been on for a few minutes. Ando's movements, although convincing, were not really satisfying when he was braced against your spine. He was simultaneously too dense and too light. Rin felt like she was propping up a motorized action figure. The camaraderie in her mind had vanished, replaced with a familiar, oh gosh, I've left my dentist appointment in the oven sensation.
And oh, don't take this the wrong way, but if you want people to think of you as a human, don't ever touch them.
Thanks, Rin,
came the inhuman voice from the plastic head beside her own.
I figured that one out already.
There was no sound of lips, of breath by her ear.
You're getting too attached.
The thing speaking was clearly not alive.
Go take care of the humans.
It could have been a recording. Maybe it was.
Molly and I can shut down the plant just fine. 1,000 little sounds of tongue and throat and teeth, chopped up and sewn back together, like a Frankenstein mockery of life.
Okay, good, I'll go something. Bye, Aunt O.
Goodbye, Rin. The sound of the words came from the little plastic bot that someone had named Ando, the bot that had killed, oh, probably hundreds of aliens. The bot that had contemplated putting the whole crew out of their misery, while they slept in stasis, helpless, one by one. Goodbye, Rin, it seemed to say. The voice echoed oddly, as if from a long, empty tunnel. Had it always done that? So then there's a long part where they are waiting for any response, and no one comes, and Buck disappears, and Rin thinks he's dead, and she gets really uncomfortable with Stan, because the robots are shut off, and Stan's getting all antsy, and then Buck comes back, and then they're listening to they're listening to the emergency radio, and basically all they're doing at this point is just harvesting food and sitting and listening to the emergency radio in case anything turns up, in case there's any signal or whatever. So then comes the chapter Overturn. I'm going to read this one. This is, before I do. So we were reading an outside, the volume outside, and then there's the volume inside, and then there's a volume upside down, and this is in volume upside down, chapter Overturn. This is the 8th volume. And I don't know what chapter number it is. They're not numbered. Rin almost died when the transfer alarm went off. She was sitting on Buck's lap, drowsing, leaning on his chest. It was early morning, and they had stayed up late talking and listening to Twinkle. She was just reaching the point where it was worth getting up to start the day, when the three-tone minor chord sounded. If a klaxon and a fire engine siren had gotten married, built a nice little house, and had a front door, this would have been their doorbell. She must have jumped clear over the chair, because she found herself on the floor, on all fours. Her hair stood on end. Everything about her was cat-like at that moment. Having been startled from her rest, the most important thing was to appear to have not been startled at all. She realized that she was doing this a moment later, and was just about to rectify it with a string of curses. Before she did, the chord ended, and an authoritative voice declared, at an ear-splitting volume, "Transfer proximity alert! Check course and heading." And that was all. The reverberations died away in the walls. The eerie tune of the Twinkle song continued, as if nothing had happened. "What was that?" Buck mumbled, stirring in his chair. The chair spun slowly around. Buck saw Rin out of the corner of his eye, just as she let out a long, low sigh.
"Gah! Rin! What? Don't sneak up on me like that! I didn't... You were... Look, what was that alarm all about?"
"Yeah. Sounds like..." Buck rose from his chair and checked a panel to one side of the room. "Yep, someone has turned the volume all the way up. Must have wanted to hear it if they were outside or something. Yikes, that was loud."
"I mean, transfer alert? Did Stan just send another probe just now?"
"No, must be another ship entering the system." He gave her his biggest, goofiest grin. "Here to rescue us all." Rin's breath caught in her throat, but then her heart fell.
"I hate you so much."
She could fear tears prickling in the edges of her eyes.
No, look.
Buck pointed at some random looking numbers. "Could be a long orbit. They must have beaten the signature coming in."
"There really is another ship?"
Stan's voice came from the doorway.
"What ship? What's happening?"
"Buddy,"
Buck said with mock seriousness.
"I'm calling in that hug."
"No way!"
Stan and Buck embraced awkwardly. It was crowded now in the tiny comms room.
"We did it!"
Rin discovered that she couldn't see quite clearly.
The transmitter, Stan sniffed. Is it on?
Can't transmit without the reactor, Rin warned.
It's gotta be something, a handheld, anything!
Stan started ransacking the drawers. They were filled with carefully labeled procedure books. Rin doubted. How to signal for help from an alien world was among them.
We can transmit using the emergency battery, Buck put in.
But it won't last long, especially since we've been using it to play twinkle tunes.
Guys, listen, Rin said.
They all grew quiet. Twinkle's haunting melody was gone. Replacing it was something utterly out of place and utterly artificial. A harsh staccato growing rapidly quicker until it blended into a rising, hissing whistle. The sound repeated twice before cutting off. They all looked at each other.
Weird, said Buck.
Sounds digital, said Stan.
I need to pee, said Rin, and with short, quick steps she left the room.
When she returned, Stan and Buck were arguing over whether to use the battery power to transmit now or wait until they heard something from their would-be rescuers.
Maybe we've attracted some alien race, Buck reasoned. They've just sent us their first contact message. They have no idea where we're from. When they arrive, we will tell them that we are all that is left of a mighty race, broken by war, with the terror from the beyond. We have fled across the galaxy to hide here on this planet. They must defeat the terror and free the galaxy, and to do so they will need our miraculous technology buried on our homeworld, Earth. Spirit at home, aboard their mighty vessel, we will...
Or they think we are the aliens, Stan interrupted. Everyone was quiet for a second.
Guys, Rin began... Getting interrupted by the radio, Rin noted that this was becoming quite her thing.
Greetings to any survivors of the ISV Armstrong. This message will repeat. This is the IEV Alois. The rest was lost. Rin had no idea why she was screaming. But there it was. Buck's mouth and eyes were open wide in something between a laugh and a roar. Stan was squealing with glee, jumping in tight circles, fists close to his face, elbows tucked in. Buck threw his arms out and swept everything into the room, into his embrace. Rin, Stan, the chair, and two dangling audio cables finding themselves wrapped together in celebration. Rin took a short breath and let out a strangled sob. They were all crying now, crying and laughing and weeping and staring into each other's eyes and reminding each other of the good news. We're saved! We made it! It worked!
They all recovered. After about 10,000 years of frenzied bliss, their faces were moist with tears and sweat, and Rin could feel a lump forming on the back of her head. The radio continued steadily.
10 hours. Stay well clear of the landing site. If there are no survivors, any robotic personnel are ordered to stand by and conserve power until further notice. Hang in there. We'll see you soon.
There was a pause, and a pop, and then,
"Greetings to any survivors," began once again.
Okay, turn on the radio. I'll talk to them. Rin's voice felt husky from all the yelling.
Stan started flipping switches.
Sure thing, Ninja.
Rin was sure that it was the first time he had called her that. Buck handed her the audio headset.
There will be a delay of... Rin waved him off as she slid the headset on.
Yeah, I know.
Buck just nodded.
Stan was fiddling with some settings.
Check levels. Say something, Rin.
Something Rin just said now. Are you transmitting?
Looks good.
Okay. Stan cut the looping audio as he got up and moved to one side.
Just flip this switch to transmit.
He indicated a single black switch in a row of about 1 million identical switches. It was helpfully labeled BKP Batter Transmit MG Overload in microscopic font.
Say transmission over or something when you're done.
Rin took the seat. She nodded slowly for a few seconds, glancing purposelessly across the inscrutable controls. Then she took a deep breath, let it out in a rush, and flipped the switch. The room was filled with the piercing screech of feedback. Rin flipped the switch back off and glared at Stan.
Sorry about that,
Stan said. He quickly adjusted something.
Try it now.
With decidedly less deliberation, Rin flipped the transmission switch again. Nothing happened. That was probably what was supposed to happen? Stan gave her the thumbs up.
Hello.
That seemed like a good place to start. What was the name of that ship again? Greetings, Alvinweez. That couldn't be right. Nothing to do but go on. This is Rin of the Armstrong. The ISV Armstrong. She was getting lost. This shouldn't be so difficult. The taste of blood brought her back on track. The Armstrong has crashed on Phoenix and is mostly broken. We are without provisions. There are 3 surviving crew and 2 robots. Crewman Buck, Crewman Stan, Bot Ando, Bot Molly, and myself. Rin. Please bring food and nutrient supplements. And coffee. She felt like there was something she was forgetting. A movement caught the corner of her eye. It was Buck. He was champing his teeth and waggling his index fingers on his forehead. Oh, and watch out for the native fauna. They are dangerous. Bring some weapons, I guess, or whatever you've got. Rin let out a little sigh. The officers are all dead, she went on, but we're doing okay. The atmosphere is breathable. Obviously. She was rambling again. Thanks for coming. Thanks so much for coming to get us. We're looking forward to seeing you. Transmission ended. After a pause, Stan reached over and flipped the switch back off. So that is the happiest chapter in the book. And then there is another, chapter 2, 3. And then that's the end of the section. They get back on the Alois. And then we get Division 9, which is about, what did it start? Yeah, so this one starts when they're back on Earth. And they're talking to everybody about everything and kind of getting back into the swing of being people on Earth instead of being people on the spaceship. And then there is the final Division 10 evening. And it's kind of wrapping everything up. There's some conversation with Ando. There's some cross-examination from an Inquisitor thing, and not an Inquisitor, but like a Inquisition. No, not an Inquisition. Like, what is it? Anyway, there's an inquiry. That's the word. Inquiry. And then there is the epilogue. And so I will read the final words of the book. Epilogue. I just don't know what to do now. On her way to the airport to catch her flight to Japan, Rin had gone back to visit David. She was stopped by the bot at the gate. Apparently, revoking security pass status on employee badges was something that ICAC got on top of right away. Rin considered just driving in anyway, but thought better of it. Instead, she had called David up and they went out for lunch. It was a different restaurant, but somehow felt the same as when they first went for sushi. Well, David's eyes twinkled. You could convert some of that severance package into psychiatric counsel. Thanks, but you're just as good, and free to boot. Well, what do you want? I want to be an astronaut, David laughed. The irony. What happened to Maine? I'm sick of doctors. I don't want to be one anymore. That's just overexposure. I'm sure you'll get over it. I had a picture on my wall. It was all snowy and perfect. That was my vision. Rin took a bite of rice and chewed it thoughtfully. Every grain had a texture. None of it tasted like swamp. It was beautiful. When I got out of quarantine, I realized that anywhere I lived would be that paradise compared to Phoenix. Anything I did would be better than dying alone on an alien world. I don't need to be a doctor anymore. I could be anything I want. Yes, Rin. Yes. You finally see it. Very slowly, Rin smiled. Thanks for listening to this reading of Fall from the Sky by Paul Spooner and Seamus Young. I hope you've enjoyed it, and you can read the rest at author.tryop.com. That's AUTHOR.TRYOP.COM.